Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to Life's a Pitch. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror and his colleague David Walker, the Mirror sports editor. This season is the gift that keeps on giving. The Premier League is fantasy football in its purest form. There's another vital weekend ahead and we'll examine that in detail later. But first, England. Now I know we've got a solemn duty not to get carried away, but anything seems possible after that win in Germany. So here's a scenario for you. No Wilshere at the Euros, no Rooney. No worries, David?
No worries if they're not fit to play. The key for me, and Roy Hodgson has said this repeatedly, and he vowed that this would be his standpoint when he picked his final squad, if a player's injured and not proved his fit, so in other words, we're not taking injured players to the tournament claiming by the first game they
could be ready. Which we've done fairly regularly.
Absolutely, and it has invariably ended in tears. So if Rooney and Jack Wilshere show their fit before the end of the domestic season, yes, they should go. I've got an awful feeling with Jack Wilshere. He's been out so long, he will not have enough games to really prove it. Rooney, if he's fit, should go, but it's not the end of the world if they're not fit.
The national mood, it seems to me, Darren, is, well, let's just change. You know, we only got fear to fear.
Well, the interesting thing about the Premier League season, as you've just been saying a second ago, is that we've seen the value of the team. And in your question, no Rooney, no Wilshere. Well, it isn't a problem because we've got a team ethic now really building under Roy Hodgson. We've got players who understand each other's game. We've got the Spurs component within the team that did so well in Germany. And I think as far as the team, the squad, the strength is concerned, we've got a lot of reason to be optimistic going into the Euros.
What about reputation? Again, you've got to pick on form rather than reputation. If you do that, Wayne Rooney doesn't deserve a place in the team, does he?
I think it's a big challenge for him now. I think he's definitely under threat. Clearly, Roy's spoken about how he rates him as a captain, as a senior pro. And it's got to be said, his goal-scoring record for England, it surpasses anybody else knocking around that squad. But the other side of it is, Mike, and I say this with a direct comparison, Darren's touched on the collective and the belief they've got of what we saw as a high-tempo team, pressing people, winning the ball back quickly and being able to play that way, and the quality that some of them have in there. You look at that and you think, that is the way forward. Now, will Wayne Rooney slow things down? Does he fit into what we're trying to see? You know, I can see this group actually becoming something very special over the next few years. This summer, I'd like to see us go with it.
Can I just defend Rooney a little bit here? Because the widely held opinion has been, as you've been saying, that Rooney, on form, you wouldn't pick him. But actually, Vardy's goal the other day was his first goal for a few games. Rooney scored 7 in his last 10. So he's record-breaking form for his country. And for Manchester United, he's scoring goals as well.
On that theme,
what basis do we say on form you wouldn't pick him?
On that theme, Darren, what about the way he's been used at Manchester United as well? Mm. Has that been to his detriment?
I do agree. I don't think they're playing to his strengths at Manchester United. I think in a team geared to get the best out of him, he would do even better than the 17 goals in all competitions that he's scored so far this season. I think as far as Rooney is concerned, if, as we expect, a Jose Mourinho takes over and he is still the focal point of that team, I think the team will be designed to get a lot more out of him.
But Darren, you're saying on form, you pick Rooney. You can't pick him. He's going to have been out 2 months.
No. I'm not saying on form you would pick him. What I'm saying is, I'm just defending his form because he would say, I have scored 7 goals in my last 10 matches.
And he is England's most prolific marksman.
Absolutely. So, on that basis.
Here's a little curveball for you.
Go on.
You know Sir Alex Ferguson very well. Had he lasted one more season at Old Trafford, Would Wayne Rooney have survived?
No. And Wayne Rooney would probably have been happy to have departed as well, given the way the relationship was there. And some people would argue you could look at statistics to show in terms of yardages, speed, etc., where Wayne Rooney is not as effective now as he probably was 3 years ago.
So you then, Darren, Tottenham, you know, you've got a PhD in Tottenham, haven't you, really? What are the lessons of the way that their players have developed? OK, someone like a Dele Alli has obviously come through the MK Dons structure and strategy, but you've got Eric Dier, you know, someone who is very good in possession, technique is terrific. You know, I hear John McDermott, who oversees the whole development structure at Tottenham, talking about every player in his academy, no matter what position they're playing, have to have the natural talents of a midfield player. Do you see that?
You do see that. And, do you know, he works hand in glove with Maurizio Pochettino, who goes to watch games at every level. And this is the sort of thing that the two of them discuss. Hugo Ekiol works with the younger players as well. And they all have a common belief, a common view that they have to develop versatility within the players, within the teams that they have, so that players are used to playing in different positions. You mentioned Eric Dier started his education in Portugal. He has played right back, has played centre-half, has played centre-half this season when they tried to cope and managed to with Watford. He came away with a late win there. But has really cemented a position in midfield for his club and has gone on to do so for his country as well. Just overall, as far as those Spurs players are concerned, what he's developed with those players is belief, because their fitness levels are so high. Mm. And despite their massive workload in so many competitions this season, they are still going strong. And he's also developed such a good understanding between Dele Alli and Harry Kane as well. That's why those two players look as though they are very strong candidates to be first picks in Hodgson's team.
Because with Dier, for instance, OK, you know, we know he developed in Portugal as well. Here's someone who played seven-a-side football until he was 13, and he had coaches who were basically enablers. They said to him, look, go and be proactive. Most coaching you see in academies now is do this, do that, do the other. And it takes away the thought process almost.
And the other thing, you're absolutely right, Mike, and Dier is developing as an all-round footballer. But don't you think the other thing we saw with England, particularly in the Germany game, the tempo they could play, it was like Tottenham playing, hunting the ball back, pinching the ball in your attacking third, getting it back there and going back at the Germans. And I promise you, I really can see a link between this. You look at that group of young Tottenham players now and you look at the England 66 team. Martin Peters hadn't been picked before May of 66 when he just came in the squad late. Jeff Hurst made his debut in the February. Martin Peters was 22 and Jeff Hurst 24. They were young emerging players, and in the end, they didn't start the tournament either, but by the end of it, they were the two guys who scored the goals that won England the World Cup. Now, I know there's the joke in the media, we always pull the legs of the West Ham guys. Mm-hmm. You know, West Ham, the team that won the World Cup. Tell you what, if England are really going to go at these Euros, I think the Tottenham contingent, the understanding they have, is going to be critical to what we do.
And what about moulding them alongside players of similar age and instincts? I'm thinking of John Stones. Now, it strikes me as pretty strange that Roy Hodgson's trying to play him down. Everyone and his wife knows that this player is going to go on a big transfer this summer somewhere, to a club which will be a great stage for it.
Yeah, I was with Chelsea last summer in America. They were fairly convinced that they would sign him at that point. But Everton, and it's a measure of the change in the landscape of the Premier League, Everton had the finance to be able to say, no, we're going to reject all the bids that Chelsea throw at us. I think some bigger clubs will come in again this summer. Stones himself has had a bit of a tricky season, really, because, and I don't share this view, but a lot of people feel he's been too clever by half. That he maybe needs to be a bit more agricultural with his clearances, maybe keep it simple. I think he's been criticised. Absolutely. I think he's been criticised for the very reason that we really did get excited about him in the first place. And I think Hodgson's played him down because he's wanted to take the heat off him.
Hang on. He's playing in a team that's got one of the worst defences in the Premier League. They ship so many goals to the point that he's not even a regular now in this club team, and he's been tried out at right back and centre back. Now, if he really is the £50 million centre back, shouldn't he be able to hold on to a place in the Everton team and be part of a much more efficient unit than what we're seeing there? Now, I'm not blaming John Stones for all Everton's woes. Roberto Martinez's teams through his career have always shipped goals and can play some wonderful football but also let goals in, which the danger is you have an exciting cup season or you get close to flirting with relegation or, as he did at Wigan, go down because you just let too many goals in. But the fact is, John Stones is not a regular in the Everton team at the moment.
I agree with that, and I don't deny that at all. I think that's part of the reason why Hodgson's talking him down, because their best results so far this season have come without John Stones in the team. This whole run towards the FA Cup semi-finals, remarkable when you consider they're 12th in the Premier League, and yet they've got the best young this, the best young that in Europe. I think it's more an indictment of Roberto Martinez rather than John Stones. I still do think the boy is talented, and I still do think with the confidence of a manager and the protection and the organisation within a good team, he can really blossom, and I think we'll see the best of John Stones.
Now, Roy says in his defence, look, I'm not a conservative coach.
No.
Now, I think he is.
I think you're probably right,
perfectly honest. Yeah. What do we expect from him over the next couple of months? Is this his real defining test of nerve?
I think it is, in terms of his experience. I know from sharing a dinner table with him a few months ago, he did have private worries about a few things. For instance, Danny Welbeck's fitness. Danny Welbeck's return is a major bonus for Roy, in the sense that Danny Welbeck can fill in different roles for England. Roy likes him as a player, likes him as a guy around the squad, and Danny Welbeck gets it. He knows what Roy's looking for. So I think there's some positives that he's having in this build-up. But you're spot on, Mike. He has to stick to what he believes in. And as I mentioned earlier, one being, I'm not going to take injured players to this tournament. They've got to be right. Now, if he stands by things like, we may get a surprise, because it's not just, you know, people are focused on Wayne Rooney. Joe Hart's injured at the moment. Yeah. What happens if Joe Hart doesn't play again in the domestic season? Do we take England's top goalkeeper, even though he's not played again with a calf injury? There's an awful lot of things that can go, or things we're not aware of at the moment. Mm. So if he sticks to what he said, he's talked a good game, really go for it, Roy, and believe in this. Because the fact is, I think the nation is ready to say, yeah, we want to see the John Stones of this world. We want to see Dele Alli let loose on these people. If we can get Ross Barkley in the team, you know, the days of having the conservative James Milner players is gone.
He's got a free go at it, really.
He has, absolutely right. He's got it there. There's no big challenger that we're saying, here is the next top Englishman who's going to succeed him. I think Roy's got a wonderful opportunity where, If we're sensible, expectations at a reasonable level, it will kick on. Mm. But he's just got to manage that whole scenario, and he's wise enough to do it.
We're now looking at a collective test of nerve. We talked about an individual test of nerve with Roy. Mm. Tottenham, again, you're very close to that club, Darren. Do you think they can do it? They've got probably the game of the weekend at Liverpool.
Yeah, I do. For two reasons, really. Liverpool just can't stop conceding. I think they've only kept two clean sheets in the league, if I'm not mistaken, since December. They just don't have that concentration. They're not able to maintain that concentration for 90 minutes. They blew a two-goal lead just before the break at Southampton. And I just think Spurs have that collective will. They've got that mentality. They're doing double training sessions at the moment during the international break with the players that have been left behind. They will continue to work on their fitness throughout the remainder of the season. The spirits are high. Confidence is high.
Is that a bit dangerous, by the way?
Well, yeah. It seems to be working for Pochettino at the moment. I was at the game just before the international break. And they were very impressive indeed, and against Bournemouth. And he basically explained he's got no real issue with that. They're not playing now two, three times a week as they had been, because they were competing on three fronts. They're only playing in one competition, and he wants to keep his players sharp enough to be able to see it through. I don't think they've got any worries whatsoever. even though that gap between themselves and Leicester is 5 points, I still do think there is a lot of confidence at Spurs that they can catch them.
And they are actually playing ahead of Leicester for a change.
Mm. Which is a big, big help. You know, you put the pressure on the team player on the Sundays. I think it's a huge thing in Tottenham's advantage. And you're right, I've got to say, maybe the biggest salute you can give to Leicester and Tottenham this season is both their managers have got a group of players who clearly believe in the collective whole. They know they need to stick together. They've got a belief in what they're doing. Yes. And they've got, within that, some brilliant individual players at both clubs. I mean, you know, let's not ignore what Leicester have done to be top of the table and some of their guys. But the key will be now, I think, fitness. I don't just mean the level you can play at, but one or two injuries now, between now and the end of the season, without stating the obvious ones at Leicester, you could say, woof, that could badly affect it. Let's just see what happens. But it's a fantastic run-in, and who would have thought that you'd be looking at Leicester and Tottenham being the top two at the start of this season? It's brilliant for football.
I think the big thing that England could learn from Spurs in particular is that they didn't need a superstar, in inverted comma, names. They got rid of a lot of players last summer. And I remember talking to Pochettino's assistant, Jesus, and he was saying, you know, we're going to bring through the younger players and we're going to give the younger players the confidence to believe that they can be part of a side that is trying to win things. People sometimes get underwhelmed by, for example, Tom Carroll, but he's come and made an effective contribution to the Spurs team. Mm. Kevin Wimmer, you know, no one had ever heard of him. He came in from Cologne. Vertonghen's been injured for quite a few weeks now, and the transition has been seamless. He has come in, learned alongside Alderweireld, performed alongside Alderweireld. And, in England's starting 11 at the Euros, you could have Rose, Walker, Dier, Ali, Kane, half the Tottenham team, all of whom have come from on the back of a season where they have learned it is all about belief, it is all about the collective will rather than individual star quality. Yeah.
Let's look at a broader issue here, David, because it strikes me that there is almost like a resurgence of interest in the Premier League because of almost like the innocence of a Leicester or a Tottenham. Now, on the other hand, you've got the big clubs conniving amongst themselves, saying, basically wanting to produce a Super League in another name by sort of changing the Champions League so that you're going to have, get rid of the dross quite early on, then you're going to have, make all your money in these groups of eight teams. People are going to be bored witless by that, aren't they?
Totally right. And football, the pyramid of football, has to be driven on merit by the success of your best teams. And this year, at the moment, the best team in England are Leicester City. Let's see if it finishes that way. But the minute we start trying to rearrange things and choosing entries into tournaments on the size of your ground, how many times you've won in Europe, the history of your club, that is fatally flawed. And I remember many years ago, and you'll name the year on this, but I remember David Dean, then at Arsenal, came up with one of the first development ideas for a European Super League that was going to be the breakaway. And it was the year that Graham Taylor's Watford had come finally from the fourth division right the way through and ended up runners-up in the old first division.
1982.
Well, there you go. The point being...
How sad's that, by the way?
Oh, I knew there was a hornet in the house. So, but the point I'm going to make is I actually did some research that year on attendances around the country, and guess what? The Luther Blissett, John Barnes, whatever, Watford team were filling the place because it was new, it was vibrant, they were an exciting team to see and people wanted to see it. And guess what? People are excited by what they're seeing with Leicester and a resurgent Tottenham. Now, I know Tottenham would see themselves as a big club, but they're not big in terms of being in the top four challenging for the title every year. The game's changed, which is part of the reason why I sense some of these clubs, the big old clubs, want to have a breakaway that's based on history. It is so flawed as a principle for the good of football. It's wrong, but you know why the money guys want to do it.
Mm. Do you agree with that?
I do. I mean, look, the whole argument as far as the big clubs are concerned, and they all went to this presentation from the guy who puts on the pre-season friendlies, the lucrative pre-season friendlies abroad, is that when you play the lesser-known teams, the unsexy teams, if you like, they're not good for TV revenues. So they want to do these two groups of eight so that, and they want to have an extended knockout tournament so that you can get rid of the so-called unsexy teams. And you've got two groups of eights, all of whom are marketable, all of whom are top clubs, your AC Milans, your Romas, your Bilbao's, your Valencia's, whatever else, the teams that people supposedly want to watch. The big problem with that is that if you look at, and this point has been made, if you look at Abati Borisov, who they beat Bayern Munich home and away three seasons ago. They've had good results against Roma, PSG, Athletic Bilbao. Suppose one of those big clubs draw Abati Borisov in the extended knockout tournament and they get knocked out. No lucrative two leagues for them. No lucrative 14 games during the course of that season. That's the thing that they have to be careful
with. The great thing in football, the great thing is when it's done on merit and you can climb that pyramid.
Absolutely.
The great thing is, in the late 60s, nobody had a clue of a team in Amsterdam called Ajax with a boy called Johan Cruyff playing. And then they go on and win three European Cups on the trot. Nottingham Forest came out of our old second division, win the first division when you had to be champions with it, and go and win two European Cups. That is what the great joy and the dream factor of football is. That's what we all grew up with, believing that my club could achieve this.
So there's no guarantees. Now, you only have to look at Aston Villa to know that. Now, you know, they're on BT Sport, they're playing Chelsea on Saturday. It's been an absolute catastrophe of a season for them. It seems now that Remy Gard is going to go. It's just a question of sorting out the compensation, surprise, surprise. Mm. Would you, if you were Sean Dyche, go for that job?
Well, I would if I were Sean Dyche, because I still do think that despite losing 21 of their 31 games so far this season, there is still something there at Aston Villa. They are still a big club. If you get it right, if you do the right business during the summer, you still would have a great chance of coming up to the Premier League next season. Already they've started sort of the clear out, if you like. Steve Honest is coming, Tom Fox, the chief exec's gone, Henry Alstad, the sporting director's gone. It looks very much as though Paddy Riley, the head of recruitment, is going to go as well. Remy Gard, he was a horrendous appointment in the first place. He should never have come in. He was an appointment for a mid-table club aspiring to get higher, rather than a club in trouble who needed someone with experience of that sort of situation, experience of English football. He's going to go. We know he's going to go. I think as far as David Bernstein coming in and Brian Little coming in as well as an advisor, they've got two people who know English football who will make good decisions and will give that chance that club a real chance. And so, yes, I do think if you're Sean Dyche, you look at that whole thing and you think, I want to be a part of that.
And they're going
to
go British.
Which is great. No, I agree. I agree with the British. I disagree with Darren completely about Sean Dyche. If I was Sean Dyche in a stable club at Burnley, I'd actually be thinking, why do I want to go and join what is a clear basket case sliding down the league for all the size of club without asking two or three key questions like, is it still for sale? Randy Lerner's openly admitted he was trying to sell it. Mm. So if I walk out of a stable club and join Villa, is the owner actually going to jump at the first? So I don't even know the people I'm working for. Who is running it on a day-to-day basis? Steve Hollis arrives as this new chairman with a very high profile in accountancy, but is he dealing with it day-to-day? One of the issues that's been flagged up over the last years. Nobody knows the football running. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody's returning calls on things. You know, the media, the PR side of it's been appallingly handled. So what's going on with all this? So, yeah, Villa's a great club with a great tradition and a lot of supporters, and they play in a fine stadium, but there's still a lot of questions out there before I'd go in as manager or tell Sean Dyche.
I think it's got Nigel Pearson written all over it.
Well, they could have had him weeks ago if they'd wanted to. I mean, the suggestions of soundings out and would he want it? But I think the questions I'm posing are the fairly obvious ones Nigel would ask as well.
I think they are good questions that you pose. But I think when you look at the calibre of manager that is interested, I wrote myself about David Moyes being interested as well, even if they were to go down, because they are a club that does have the potential. I accept, you know, there are real issues within the club that they have to deal with.
But
I think
that comes
from the top. I do think there are concerns about the ownership of the club and the direction that they want to go in. But I don't think somebody with David Bernstein's experience would get involved with the club if he was not satisfied that there was the potential for them to go in a better direction.
OK, let's look at Chelsea. Yeah. Let's forget about waiting for Godot. We're waiting for Antonio, aren't we? When is Conte actually going to turn up or actually be ratified as their new manager?
That's a really good question, because he's already come out and said, look, I'm no longer going to be in charge of Italy after the Euros. He's told that to the Italian Federation. So you have to wonder why Chelsea are waiting for so long. Well, I have a suspicion that they want to, maybe because there are legal issues that he's involved in. He hasn't been implicated in any match fixing at all, but he has been named as somebody who, you know, has to take part in this trial that is coming up. Maybe Chelsea don't want to be in any way associated with that. But certainly it
doesn't... They never do anything simply, do they?
They do like to do things the hard way. It's difficult for Chelsea as well because, I mean, in the summer, look, everyone's talking about the players that they may well get in. They will have 60 players return for duty at the start of next season. What are they going to do with those players, particularly if they were to spend big during the summer?
First training sessions, I mean, like, where's Wally picture, isn't it? You know, it's ridiculous.
I mean, you've got to say, Mike, that in some respects, if you were a young player, and a lot of these guys are, you know, Roman Abramovich has this pool of scouts that travel around the world and come up recommending people to him, and it would appear that a succession of Chelsea managers sort of say, well, you can park him, I don't really want him around. And you're left with this thing about, this is madness, because how are you really going to judge how good those players are, and how are you going to get a fair chance? And, you know, they're actively recruiting, be it from lower divisions in England, from, you know, from really good development squads, they're looking at them. If you were the parent of one of those kids, yeah, there's a shed load of money available, but would you really want your kid to go and join the Chelsea hordes? You know, it's madness.
Managers, you know, they're the great myth makers, aren't they? Newcastle have basically bought into the Rafa Benitez myth. They've got a huge game that probably they can't afford to lose against Norwich on Saturday. Is that a good appointment?
Yeah, I am a Rafa Benitez fan, actually, so you can hit me over the head, but I don't think Benitez is a myth. I think he's an organiser. I looked at the game against Leicester, the defeat to Leicester, and I saw signs there that already there was a greater appetite in the Newcastle players than there had been under Steve McClaren. I think they would have been relegated had Steve stayed. I look at the manner of the recovery against Sunderland as well, and again, they looked like there was an appetite and a desire in the Newcastle team. Norwich have got a great chance to save themselves if they beat Newcastle. But the big problem is, I think those two results that they've had, the last two results, a draw against City. City are awful at the moment. They beat West Brom, have got their own problems at the Hawthorns at the moment. You have to look at the form before that, where they lost, I think it's 8 out of their previous 9. The only point they managed to get was against West Brom. They had been two goals up against, sorry, West Ham. They had been two goals up against West Ham and blew that lead. They can't defend, and I think Newcastle can go there and beat them.
If you look at it now, Mike, Norwich, next three games, they've got Newcastle at home at the weekend, then they've got Palace away, and then they've got Sunderland. And if Norwich, if we're putting this as a positive sign for the Canaries, if they came out of those three games with, let's say, 7 points, so they win a couple, they could nick a draw or something, if they do that, that will transform it because of who they're taking points off. If they don't, and particularly if Norwich carry on losing, and given they've got the worst of the goal difference in that little pack, I've got to say, I presume we're agreeing Villa are written off now, they're going. I sense the next three games will decide if Norwich are going to be fighting towards the end or going to be sliding into the second.
What about Sunderland? What about Sunderland?
I think you'd have to say that they've got a chance with Sam Allardyce in charge. With Jermaine Defoe up front, they've got the goal threat. He seems to be saving them quite a lot these days. Where you would worry is defensively, because they just have a mistake in them, it seems, in every game. And they don't seem to have that consistency at the back that would fill you with confidence that they could put together a sustained run. So, yes, they've got a chance, but really they've got to take that chance over the next few games. The big problem for all four of those teams, and Sunderland are within them, is that they are, what, I think Palace on 33 points and Norwich on 28. So it's from Norwich downwards. I can't see any of those four teams below Palace putting together a run sustained enough to be able to reel Palace in. So one of them, three of them will go down. But I think Sunderland's ability to score goals, and Jermaine Defoe is priceless to them, gives them a real chance. And Sam Allardyce obviously has got a great record in terms of keeping
clubs up. I've got to take issue with there on one thing.
Go on.
History shows us somebody could, as they did last year, and Sunderland were one of the beneficiaries. Leicester did it. One of these, this lot, could go and win five on the bounce. We've seen it.
Mm. Yeah, but history shows us. But you look at the evidence of all of their form, of those clubs' form at the moment.
Absolutely. No. I agree with you, Darren. You're saying the points per game as an average. Mm. But the fact is, going into this last run of games, somebody in there can pull off something absolutely incredible. It might even run to the last day of the season. It has been done. Now, you're right. For me, I think Sunderland, with the goal threat, are the most likely to achieve something. Conversely, and I know Sam Allardyce is brilliant at organising his defence, you've got to say that you wouldn't fancy the back four in Norwich, Sunderland or Newcastle's team. You know, that there are goals to be had against them.
OK, as a final point, chaps, it's the Wayne Rooney fixture this weekend, Everton against Man United. Obviously, there are FA Cup implications in that as well. A final point on Wayne Rooney, basically to end where we began. Is he in your team that plays against Russia in the first game of the European Championships? Yes or no?
Yes, if he has proved he's fully fit.
No, he wouldn't be for me. I think you have him in the squad, but you don't have him in the team because you have younger players and you have a more fluid, more flexible side without Rooney in it. And I think he has to earn his England place and he has to prove that the England team can work within him, because what we saw on Saturday night against Germany showed us that without Rooney, we have a team that's much more enjoyable to watch than it has been for quite some time.
Well, it's a no from me as well. Over to you, Roy. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.